Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Deja Vu edition. Following a 23-20 Monday night loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers that saw the Bengals blow a 17-0 lead, shatter the franchise record for penalty yards in a game, and lose a star player to a cheap shot by a member of the Steelers. Coming up, radio replays from Monday's game, locker room comments from A.J. Green, George Iloka, and others, plus post-game analysis from my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. And after we recap Monday's loss, we'll wrap things up with something considerably less depressing, a fun facts interview with one of the Bengals' all-time best players who won a Super Bowl ring with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Before we get to all of that, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since SportsSync Radio. Fairly frequently, Bengals fans will say to me, "Man, I would love to listen to you and Lap on the radio while I watch the game on TV, but the audio is just too far ahead of the TV picture." Well, SportsSync Radio is a device that fixes that problem. It's an actual radio, so it doesn't work if you are out of range of one of our radio affiliates. But if you are in range, the SportsSync Radio allows you to delay the audio on the radio until you can match it up to the TV. It might make a good Christmas gift. They're about $70 if you're interested. You can check it out at SportsSyncRadio.com. That's Sport, S-Y-N-C, Radio.com. Enough of that free ad. Let's get to the game. There was only one turnover on Monday night, and it came on the fifth play from scrimmage.
Roethlisberger back to throw, looking right, pump fakes, throws over the middle, and it is intercepted. Yeah! Adam Jones, interception at the 42-yard line.
That interception for Ben Roethlisberger was his 13th of the year. Only Deshaun Kizer of Cleveland has thrown more. It led to a 35-yard field goal by Randy Bullock and a 3-0 lead. After the Steelers punted on their second possession, the Bengals marched 85 yards to score again.
Shotgun snap. Dalton back to throw. His pass caught for a touchdown near the forward right pylon by Adriel Jeremiah Green.
That 8-yard touchdown pass made it 10-0 Cincinnati at the end of the first quarter. The Steelers failed to score on their first four possessions. And things really looked good for the Bengals when they capped a 15-play, 78-yard drive by scoring in the final minute of the first half.
Corner blitz coming. Dalton throws for Green. Caught at the goal line. Touchdown, Cincinnati, as the Bengals beat the corner blitz and hit A.J. Green for his second touchdown of the first half.
The Bengals led 17-0 with 31 seconds left in the half. Here's linebacker Kevin Minter.
You never feel like any game is over because, I mean, you know, especially with a quarterback like that and a team like that, I mean, you know, it's, you know, they can come back at any time. You know, obviously they did. So, you know, we never thought the game was over.
A clear sign that it wasn't over was what transpired at the end of the first half. The Steelers had the ball at their own 17 with 21 seconds to go. A checkdown pass to Le'Veon Bell gained 33 yards to midfield and only took 10 seconds off the clock. Then Big Ben threw a deep ball for Antonio Brown that fell incomplete, but Dre Kirkpatrick was called for a 38-yard pass interference penalty down to the 12-yard line. That allowed Chris Boswell to kick a field goal to end the half, and get this. According to Jay Morrison of the Dayton Daily News, the Steelers have scored in the last 2 minutes of the first half in 19 of their last 23 games against the Bengals. That is simply mind-boggling. Here's George Iloka on gift-wrapping 3 points to the Steelers at the end of the half.
A team like that, you got to keep the pressure on them. You can't give them any room to breathe.
After nearly being shut out in the first half, the Steelers had no trouble scoring their first touchdown in the third quarter.
Roethlisberger looking around, checks it down to a wide open Le'Veon Bell. goes into a high-stepping routine, runs it into the end zone, touchdown. And it's a touchdown.
They never pushed
the
him
Bengals
out of
thought he was out of bounds.
Oh, my God.
Never pushed him out.
Oh, my
they
God.
Had two defenders at the 20-yard line, and they let him just walk down the sideline.
After Jordan Evans failed to tackle Le'Veon Bell close to the sideline, Will Jackson could have easily pushed him out of bounds. But as legendary Detroit Tigers announcer Ernie Harwell used to say, he stood there like a house by the side of the road as Bell trotted down the sideline for a 35-yard touchdown. Here's Jackson's explanation.
I thought he was out. I didn't want to lay hit him. I guess, I mean, as a veteran guy, he turned it up and caught me slipping and scored a touchdown.
He was as surprised as anybody that he wasn't out?
Yeah, I definitely was surprised. I just knew he was out of bounds, but obviously he wasn't, so it is what it is.
The 17-point lead was down to 7. But the Bengals answered with their biggest play of the night, a 61-yard touchdown pass to A.J. Green. That didn't count. It was wiped out by a holding penalty on Giovanni Bernard, one of 13 Bengals penalties, for a franchise record 173 yards. The old record was 134, so they shattered it. Here's defensive lineman Chris Smith.
Some of those I disagree with. I think some everybody does. But, I mean, yeah, we just got to – I mean, some of those was on us, but we just got to not make those calls. If they're going to call it, we got to find a way not to, you know, be in those situations. So, you know, that did hurt us down the stretch. So, that's one thing about it. We just – every you know, each game, not just this game, but every game, we just got to learn not to beat ourselves.
The Bengals did get a field goal on the drive where Green's touchdown was nullified and went to the fourth quarter leading 20-10. Going into the game, the Bengals had won the last 42 times they led by 10 or more points going to the fourth quarter. But this game was against the Steelers, where logic does not apply. On Pittsburgh's first drive of the fourth quarter, a 30-yard pass interference penalty against Kirkpatrick helped the Steelers kick a field goal and cut the deficit to 7. The Bengals promptly had a 3-and-out on offense, featuring a drop pass by Brandon LaFell, and the Steelers went to work on a game-tying touchdown drive. On the fourth play of the drive, rookie receiver Juju Smith-Schuster leveled Vontaze Burfict with a blindside cheap shot hit right under the jaw, then stood over Vontaze, taunting him. Burfict was taken off the field on a cart. Smith-Schuster was penalized, but not ejected. Here's Will Jackson.
I mean, it's football, but I think it was a dirty play. And if Tez would have did that, he would have got kicked out of the game. So I just feel like they didn't really do justice for Tez. They should have kicked him out of the game because I know they would have kicked Tez out if he would have did something like that.
Earlier in the game, Pittsburgh star linebacker Ryan Shazier was carted off the field, although it was the result of his own tackle and not being hit by a Bengal. The hit that injured Burfict was dangerous, according to A.J. Green.
That was a dirty hit, man. It's a dirty hit. It's not called for, man. We already play a dangerous sport, man. We all, you know, we all put our lives on the line when we come up every week. And, you know, you just don't want nothing like that happening to a player, no matter what team we're playing, how big the rivalry is. We gotta protect each other, man. We already play a real high, injury sport. So what do we do to protect each other? We have to do.
George Iloka took exception to Smith-Schuster taunting Burfict more than the hit.
I wasn't a fan of the standing over a player, especially hurt. So that's something they've complained about. So to do it too, you know, whatever. But that's no here or there. We ain't lose the game because of that. But definitely wasn't a fan of that. You know, someone gets hurt, you don't know the extent of their injury. To stand over them for 5-10 seconds after that, it's kind of bush league, but it is what it is. You know how these games go.
Without Burfict on the field, the Steelers had no trouble scoring the tying touchdown.
Penn looks for Brown, throws, touchdown.
And there's a penalty flag on the hit. George Iloka
hitting Brown, who got laid out by George Iloka, but he held on to the ball. And the Steelers are a PAT away from tying it unless they go for two.
Here's Kevin Minter.
We just got to swallow this one, you know, especially me, you know. I didn't play up to par, you know. Latavius came out, you know. A lot of those plays was on me, you know, and I take that. You know, I take this loss. You know, these guys fought their butt off, and, you know, I got to play better.
It was 20-20 when the Bengals got the ball back at their own 12-yard line. The first play of the drive was a pass that went right through the hands of A.J. Green.
It was very disappointing because we had it. We played well in the first half. Second half, you know, I didn't make enough plays. Comes down to me. I got to make that catch.
The Bengals went three and out, and Kevin Huber's punt gave Pittsburgh the ball at their own 41 with 2:42 to go. And we've all seen that movie before. Ben Roethlisberger drove the Steelers down to the 20, giving Chris Boswell the opportunity to win the game with a 38-yard field goal try at the gun.
His kick is up. His kick is good. The Pittsburgh Steelers have done it again.
The final score, Pittsburgh 23, Cincinnati 20. The Steelers have beaten the Bengals six straight times and are a ridiculous 15-2 against the Bengals at Paul Brown Stadium. Here are George Iloka, A.J. Green, and Kevin Minter.
Kind of feels like deja vu. Kind of has that, not to the extent, but it kind of has that feel like how when we lost the playoff game. I mean, that playoff loss was more like we imploded. This wasn't like that, but the playoff game was like a sudden, like we imploded like out of nowhere. But this one was like slowly. And before you know it, you're like, whoa, damn, we playing for the game right here. So it's frustrating, you know, because we put our heart into this. But, you know, you can just tell we wanted this game bad. And I don't know if people are writing us off and stuff going into the game. But you could tell how we came out. Like, we really wanted this game. So it's definitely frustrating to not get the end result we want.
It's tough, man. Like I said, you know, put in all this work each and every week for 6 months and just not working out. You know, if you look at all our games, we're losing, you know, by a small margin. But sometimes how the season goes, continue to get better each week and try to win the next game.
You could definitely feel the electricity in the air when the game started and throughout the whole game. You know, the crowd was with us, and just got to tell the fans, you know, I apologize for letting y'all down.
It's the second time this year the Bengals led by 14 at the half and lost. That was also the case at Green Bay. Time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham, for postgame analysis.
In the locker room after the game, George Iloka said it feels like deja vu. He was specifically referring to the finish of the 2015 playoff game, but for Bengals fans that go back much longer than that, you could be describing a lot of games against the Pittsburgh Steelers where the Bengals did so many things well in building a 17-0 lead and let it slip through their fingers.
How many times have we seen this script written by Charles Dickens, you know, the tale of two halves, particularly against this football team? And, you know, you just, as the tide starts to turn, you start to think, man, is that clock frozen? Why doesn't that clock run? You know, I mean, how many more possessions do you think they're going to get? Because it just, once the momentum shifted, they just couldn't get it back. But, I mean, really, 13 penalties for 173 yards. The Steelers had, you know, 350 yards of offense. That's giving them 520 yards. You give them another football field in three quarters, and they're too good to you know, give them those kind of opportunities. It's just incredible the number of penalties. 13 for 173 yards. That yardage is a franchise record, unfortunately. Not a record you want to be part of. But this game in particular, Dan, you know, talking to a lot of the guys, when you go home and you're looking at your ceiling trying to go to sleep, it turns into a movie screen, and you're going to see play after play after play that if any of them had a different outcome, the game would have had a different outcome. So, but, you know, self-destruction by penalty was the headliner tonight for sure.
One of those penalties wiped out a 61-yard touchdown catch by A.J. Green. It would have been the first time in his career that he had three touchdown catches in a game. But late in the game, A.J. dropped a pass. Brandon LaFell dropped a pass when the Bengals had the opportunity to go down the field and score a winning field goal or a winning touchdown. And unfortunately, every little thing adds up in the end.
True. I mean, in the first half, I thought the Bengals played their best first half of complimentary football. I mean, you know, the first four possessions by Pittsburgh, they didn't even line up to kick a field goal. I mean, they couldn't get anything done. The Bengals are really doing a good job. I mean, they had a great game plan. They ran the ball between the tackles effectively. They had a little, play where Erickson is the lead blocker after coming in motion, you know, to lead Andy Dalton around the horn, you know, in the red zone for a nice run. I mean, they had nice little schematics, and they were executing, you know, so well in that first half. And then it just, I mean, the tables just completely flipped, completely turned. And that's what, you know, a football team, to get where you want to be, you have to be able to curb the tide. You know, when there's going to be momentum shifts during the course of a football game, you just can't let the tide turn into a tidal wave and just wash you away. And that's what happened in the second half. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers, it ended up being a tidal wave.
I'll mention one more mistake. It may have turned out to be a touchdown drive anyway, but letting Le'Veon Bell waltz down the sideline for a touchdown when all the Bengals had to do was push him with the slightest of shoves to get him out of bounds.
And to me, that's the summation of this game, because it might have been as brutally hard a hitting game as I've ever seen. I mean, you know, two star linebackers for each team leave the field with head, neck, back, in whatever the case may be, because of hits, and one legal and one not. One kind of more self-inflicted than the other, but irregardless, they're carted off the field. And, you know, Mixon's concussed. I mean, there's all kinds of hitting going on. And one of the plays that decides the outcome of the game, it's they're not even playing touch football. There's no hitting that went on. So it's almost like, how does that play fit this football game where all of it was, you know, double chin straps, two mouthpieces, you know, put on the big boy pads, and that play on the sideline was anything but.
With the loss, the Bengals are 5-7 with four games to go. Their playoff chances are on life support. Let's move on to something less depressing. As you know, the Bengals are celebrating their 50th season this year. And on this episode of the Bengals Booth podcast, we have a special Fun Facts interview with the player selected by fans and media in the offseason as the second greatest player in franchise history. Time for some fun facts with the greatest quarterback in Bengals history, Ken Anderson from Batavia, Illinois, not too far from Chicago. I've read that as a kid, you spoke Swedish in the home. Is that correct?
No. Okay. Now, my grandparents probably did when my dad was young, but both my grandparents had passed away by the time that I was born. So, no, we did not speak Swedish in my house. But when I went to Augustana College, I did take 2 years of Swedish as my foreign language.
Gotcha. Well, my grandparents are Swedish, so I was going to hit you with some Swedish terms. Repeat.
Ja talar en liten svenska.
And what does that mean?
I speak a little Swedish.
All right. Very good. I didn't know that. All right. As maybe some people know, your next door neighbor and childhood friend was a basketball Hall of Famer, Dan Issel, the all-time leading scorer at the University of Kentucky. What do you think you two guys did for each other in your athletic development?
Well, you know, I don't think we did anything for each other. I think it was more the collection of guys that we had in our neighborhood to play with. You know, there's Dick Hallman and Tim and Tom Nelson and Bill Ski. You know, those guys were a couple years older than us. So I think as we went through and from a young age, whether it's Little League and then you get into junior high, that we're always in the summers and in the winters, you know, shoveling off driveways, playing basketball. We're competing with kids that may be a little bit older than us, and I think that was what helped our development.
Basketball announcer, sideline reporter, Craig Sager was at your high school at roughly the same time too, right?
He was. Craig was 2 years younger than I was. He played on my Little League baseball team, and the thing that I remember was one summer his dad really wanted to be a good baseball player. And he put up a batting cage in his backyard. And he kind of paid me a couple of bucks if I would come over and pitch to Craig and teach him how to hit. Well, that was okay. I mean, a couple of bucks for a kid is you always take that. But he was one of the few people in town that had an in-ground pool, and he had a very attractive older sister. So that was, there were perks to the job.
No question about it. We're doing Fun Facts with Ken Anderson. You went to Augustana College with an enrollment of 2,250 students at the time on a basketball scholarship, not football.
Well, I went there to play basketball. There were no scholarships per se athletically at Augustana. As I remember, the tuition and room and board were about $3,000 at that time. I got a state scholarship for academics and financial need. The college could give me $500, and then I had summer jobs to pay for the other. My folks really couldn't help me pay for my college education. But I thought, you know, basketball was my best sport in high school. I was going to play there. I thought my best potential was as a baseball player, and I was going to play baseball in Augustana. And then the summer before I enrolled, my high school football coach talked me into going out for football. The head football coach said, yes, come on out. At Division III, they take warm bodies to fill up the roster. And by the third game of the year, I was starting on the varsity as the quarterback and ended up starting on the varsity in basketball as a freshman and never did play baseball.
You scored more than 1,000 points in basketball, but by the time you were a senior, it sounds like you knew that you had the best chance to play professionally in football. When did that seem like a realistic possibility for you?
Well, you know, in my junior year, scouts started to come around in the spring, and they would test me. We'd go out and we would work out a little bit. So I think most teams were aware of me. If you remember, one of the big announcers in Chicago was Jack Brickhouse, both for the Cubs and the Bears, you know, a nationally known, you know, announcer. His daughter was in my class, and so he would come out for every homecoming year, and he would go back and tell George Halas. He said, you know, I don't know a lot, but he said, there's this kid out of Augustana, may not be too bad of a quarterback. And every year he would go back and tell him about me. Well, after my senior year, the Bears called for tickets to a game. Unfortunately, our season was already over. We only played 9 games.
Now, Mike Brown was among the people that came to Augustana to see you. Do you remember the Bengals watching you?
No question about it. You know, Mike came to a home game. I think it might have been against Wheaton College, and I played pretty well. And in those days, the coaching staff went out on Saturdays to scout. And so the Bengals were playing in Cleveland, and I was playing against Carroll College in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And Bill Walsh was at that game and then caught a flight and went to Cleveland that night. So both of them had scouted me. And of course, then after the season was over, Bill came out and personally worked me out at Augustana.
So the Bengals drafted you in the third round in 71, and you mentioned Bill Walsh. He was your quarterback's coach for your first 5 NFL seasons. What did he do for you?
Well, he gave me the fundamentals of playing the position that lasted a lifetime, not only as a player, but as a coach coaching quarterbacks. Just the attention to detail and fundamentals and the importance of the quarterback's drop, the depth and the steps, timing up with the routes of the receivers to make everything precise and what we were doing. And I remember it goes on, you know, Steve Young once said, you can film me from the waist down and I can tell you if I had a good game because of my footwork. And so that was what Bill was all about. And he made it fun. We worked hard and, you know, I owe him a lot.
We're doing Fun Facts with Ken Anderson. Let's fast forward to your MVP season in 1981 because it started as horribly as it could have possibly started. Did you think you were going to lose your job in week one?
It could have very well happened. You know, I found out the next day after coming to practice that I was not going to start the next week, and I was not told that. And so I went back down to Spinney Field and was talking with Forrest Gregg and Lindy Infante and, you know, why didn't you tell me? And, well, there's a lot of things that go into this. And we had a lot of discussions. And Forrest said, see me Wednesday morning, 7 o'clock. And went back in and we talked. And maybe it's best if I came off the bench. The guy that they had drafted to replace me was Jack Thompson. So when I got pulled in the opening game, it was Turk Schonert, our third quarterback, that came in and won the game. I think Jack was not able to play the next week again. I think had he been healthy, I may not have played. But the end result was Forrest said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to start. And we went and we beat the Jets in a 31-30, I think, was the score. And that kind of was the springboard for the rest of the season.
So you went on to be MVP in 81, led the Bengals to a win over the Bills for the first playoff victory in franchise history, and that takes you to the Freezer Bowl. What are your most vivid memories, weather-wise, of that game?
Just how cold it was. You know, I was always up early, and you know, it was a sunny day, and, you know, I'm going to go out, have a cup of coffee, read the paper before pregame meal. And so I kind of just stepped outside the door of the hotel and go, whoa, this is some serious cold. And then, you know, you get down to the stadium and you kind of have your warm-up routine. And well, let me change. I can do a little bit more inside this game. But, you know, Forrest Gregg's his pregame talk was, as I remember, you know, men, it's a lot like going to the dentist. You know it's going to hurt, but you got to go anyway. But my most vivid memory of the game is I'm sitting on the bench in the first quarter, and they brought in heated benches, and we had never seen those before. And they had the little slots that you put your feet in, and I'm sitting on my hands, and luckily I've got my helmet on because there's a big roar. and I stand up to see if there's a turnover before going back on the field. My feet don't come out of the slots. I go down, and the first thing that hits is my face mask, and I'm seeing stars, and I'm calling for Marv Polland, our trainer. I need smellings. Give me something. I can't get knocked out of the championship game falling off the gosh dang bench.
So you led the Bengals to the victory over the Chargers. Then it was on to Super Bowl 16 against San Francisco, down 20-0 at the half. He came back and made it a game, wound up losing 26-21. Does it still hurt this many years later?
Well, probably hurts more now than it did at the time. We were a really good football team, and I thought, this is the start. We're going to go back again the next year. And, of course, the next year was a strike-shortened year, but we still had the best record in the league, or tied for the best record in the league the next year. Well, we get beaten the first round of the playoffs by the Jets, and we never made it back again. And so I think the disappointing thing is that we didn't play our best that game, and certainly I didn't. When you've got five turnovers as a team and two interceptions from me, that's hard to overcome and win a football game.
A couple more fun facts with Ken Anderson. You have a Super Bowl ring as the quarterback's coach for the Steelers, Mike Tomlin's Steelers in 2009. Is it a little bit strange to look down at your Super Bowl ring and see a Steelers logo?
Well, that's why it never leaves Hilton Head and comes to Cincinnati. It never comes back to Cincinnati. But they were very good to me, and that was a fun place to be. You know, it's so sad that Dan Rooney passed away not long ago. He was very gracious to me. Mike Tomlin, you know, kept me in the league so I could get my coach's retirement. I had a great quarterback to work with in Ben Roethlisberger. And I always tell people, there are more similarities between the Steelers organization and the Bengals organization than there are differences. Mm-hmm. And it was always tough when you had to play them, you know, on the other side. And my son Matt is as big a diehard Bengal fan as there is, but he always wanted to support his dad. And when he came to that last Steelers game and he knew I was going to retire, he walked back and went across the street and took off all of his Steelers gear and gave it away, said, "I'll never put that on again."
He's a smart kid. You raised him well.
No question.
I really appreciate this. Thanks so much, Ken.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe and do me a favor and give it a rating or leave a comment. It would be great to know how many of you are listening and what you think. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.